This side contains exercises that ask you to close your eyes and use visualization techniques. You may want to wait to listen to this side until you're not driving, so you can relax completely and get full benefit from this tape.
We've talked about so far the power of human communication, but what are we using communication for? I've talked about using communication to get yourself to take action, but really, what do we need to do to get ourselves to take action? How do we need to communicate to ourselves? What's the element that makes the difference in the quality of how you behave and how you feel? Well, the element that I believe makes the difference is something I call state. Your state of mind and emotions at any moment in time will determine how much of your resources are available to you.
Now, how many of you, as an example, just to kind of help us find out what the cause of the creation of human behavior is, how many of you have ever had an experience where you did something, and then after you did it, you went, oh, God, I can't even believe I did that? How many have had that experience? How many of you, same people, have been in a similar situation where after you did something, you went, yeah, that was me. Same situation, yet look at the difference in results. One time you don't even want to talk about it, the other one you're happy to chat about it. How come? How come you're producing such varied behaviors in the same basic situation? And the answer is because your behavior was the result of the state that you were in at that time. See, state was basically the generator or the governor of human behavior. Your behaviors are the result of the state you're in. That's how you can explain times when you went, God, I can't even believe I did that. It's because you were in a state where you were not as resourceful as usual. So now the next question, of course, is, well, what creates state? Well, basically, two things generate state. One of the things that generates state that's most obvious is physiology. That is, how you physically feel will determine greatly how you're using your body, your biochemical functioning, your posture, your breathing pattern will definitely affect the kind of state you're in. If you're sitting in a posture that's sort of like this, and you're breathing really, you know, shallow, and you got this kind of tonality and stuff, do you really feel like you'd be like really motivated to do all kinds of stuff in your life? Probably not the most powerful state to be in, okay? Because that will affect you, won't it? When you're physically run down, do you not respond differently than when you're physically vibrant? Yes or no?
Yes.
Of course you do. So physiology tremendously affects state and therefore behavior. Okay? Now the other thing that's equally powerful in affecting someone's state and thus their behavior is the way they represent the world inside themselves. We call these things internal representations. Internal representations, the way we represent what's going on inside our own head. In other words, the pictures that we make on our head, what we picture and how we picture it. What we say to ourselves and how we say it to ourselves, the tone of voice that we use in our head, those things affect our state. See, if you go, yeah, I really want to do this, or if you go, I really want to do this, doesn't that tonality make a difference in your state? You bet. So it's not just what you say, but how you say it. It's not just what you picture, but how you picture it. Those things affect state and determine behavior just as much as physiology does. The two work together. In fact, if you feel physically vibrant, you usually perceive the world differently, don't you? If you perceive the world differently, that also changes your physical vibrancy. Have you ever been in a situation where you're physically tired and then something caught your interest, really got you excited mentally, and all of a sudden you felt physically strong and energized? How many have had that experience? Of course. So these two are on what we call a cybernetic loop, where if you change one, the other one changes automatically. Okay, they're linked together. The ideal is to change them both simultaneously so they support you in going to the kind of state that'll support you in producing the kind of behavior that you want. Behavior is the result of the state that we're in, and the state we are in is the result of how we represent things internally, meaning, again, what we picture in our minds and what we say or hear in our minds, as well as our biochemical functioning, our breathing patterns, our muscular tension and relaxation. If you learn to direct the way you represent things mentally and the way in which you use your body, you can direct any aspect of your life. For example, a woman came into me recently and she was very, very upset. She was extremely depressed and had been, according to her, for the last 12 years. Her response to me immediately as she walks in the room is, I can see how she's producing this state called depression. She's doing it by the way she uses her body. So she tells me on and on about all the depressing things she does and how she's even depressed when she's sleeping as she begins to weep and cry in front of me. And I simply turn to her and I say, that's fascinating. How do you do that? She looked at me quite startled. What do you mean, how do I do this? I'm just depressed. I just feel so terrible. Well, how do you get yourself to feel so terrible? I asked her. She said, I don't know. It just happens to me. I said, no, it doesn't just happen to you. You have to do certain things in your mind and certain things in your body to feel depressed. I said, you have to send certain messages. I explained to her, there are no results in your life, either emotional or behavioral, without some cause, without you taking some mental or physical action or a combination thereof. I said, what are you doing with your body that makes you feel depressed? She goes, I don't know. I said, well, let me show you. If I were to take on your physiology, let's see if I can feel as depressed as you. And I began to contort my posture, and I began to drop my shoulders and look down and create muscular tension in my face and squint. I said, yeah, now I feel pretty lousy. Now let me mimic your voice tone. Oh, I feel terrible. Yeah, I said, now I'm really feeling lousy. I said, now what are you picturing in your mind? What are you saying to yourself? She goes, well, I'm just picturing the worst thing that could happen. I said, oh, yeah, now I feel totally depressed, too. Now I know how I could do it. I just have to think this way and use my body this way consistently, and I'd be depressed. She looked at me and she smiled. I said, would you like to change? She said, well, that's why I'm here. I said, well, start by changing the quality of your voice tone. Say, that's why I'm here, and use a different tone of voice. She said, that's why I'm here. I said, no, try it a little differently. Say, that's why I'm here. She said, that's why I'm here. All of a sudden, her face changed. Her body began to change. I said, sit the way you'd be sitting right now if you felt totally joyous and excited. She goes, well, I don't really know. I said, well, if you did know, show me how you'd sit. So she said, well, I guess. And she began to change her posture, which immediately sent new messages to her brain about how to feel. Your posture, your breathing pattern, your muscular tension or relaxation tells your brain and emotions how to feel. So she changed her posture. Her shoulders came up. She began to breathe differently. Her facial expression changed. She began to smile. And all of a sudden, she felt very happy. I said, are you depressed now? She said, no. She said, but I'll get depressed later. I said, the only way you'll get depressed later is if you run your brain and your body in the way you were a few moments ago. Instead, develop the pattern of moving your body, walking, talking, breathing, having your face look like what it would look like if you were very happy. You will feel that way. For years, I've been teaching that if you want to change how you feel and how you behave, change the way you use your physiology. If, for example, you're depressed, but you put a smile on your face, you will not feel depressed. Just recently, scientists at the University of California have verified this. They have found that people are beating lie detectors by putting themselves in a physiology or a posture and breathing pattern similar to that of when they're telling the truth. As a result, they feel as if what they're saying is true, and they even fool a lie detector. Why not reprogram your own body by changing how you use your body and your thought processes? And what I'd like to do in this tape is show you some specific ways to make those changes. But first, remember, you're already producing results. So if you don't like the result you're getting, emotionally or behaviorally, change how you communicate to yourself. Change either what you're picturing in your mind or what you're hearing or saying to yourself, or change the way you use your body, or both. See, you have all the resources you really need to succeed in your life. The question is, can you get access to them in the appropriate place? I mean, haven't you had a time in your life when you snapped at somebody for no particular reason? It had nothing to do with them. It was just the state you were in. You weren't very resourceful, were you? And haven't you also had times in your life where somebody did something really terrible, but you were really compassionate in your response? It had to do with how your posture was, how your breathing was, how you were picturing things, how you looked at things in that time. You know, for centuries, man's been fascinated by ways to alter his states and thus his experience of life. He's tried fasting, drugs, ritual, music, sex, food, hypnosis, chanting. All these things will have their uses and they all have their limitations. However, what I want you to do now is just learn how to take direct control. I've said before, your brain is like a biocomputer. All you have to do is punch in the signals of what results you want and you'll get them. Why not just do it directly? It's all controlling and directing states. Really, I would say the quality of your life is not only the quality of your communication, but it's really based upon your ability to manage states. Maybe your goal should be an effective state manager, because by managing your states, you manage your emotions and thus your behaviors in life. That's why, for example, when we have toddlers, we make sure that they stay rested up, because we know as they get more tired, as their physiology changes, their positive responsiveness to the environment also changes. That's why we make sure they get a nap so they're not cranky. Human beings, as they grow older, some of them still need naps. Some of them still need ways to have more energy so they're not so cranky in their response. But remember, how we represent things, how we use our body, those are the keys. Those are the master tools to directing your brain, your emotion, your behavior, and your life. For example, how do you respond when a loved one arrives home hours late from when you expected them? Well, it depends on how you were representing why they're late. If during the 2 hours that you were waiting for them, you imagine that the reason they were late is they may have been in a car accident, and you imagine them bloody or possibly in a hospital, then when they arrive home, you might greet them with a state of concern. You might give them a big hug and say, "God, how are you?" If instead, while they were late for those 2 hours, you continue to represent to yourself the possibility mentally that the reason they were late is they didn't care about you, or because they were with someone else in a clandestine affair, then I guarantee you'll be in a different state when they arrive home, and you will probably treat them in a way that will cause them to want to have clandestine affairs, because you wouldn't be very pleasant to be around. Also, the other thing that would determine your response is if you were physically run down, you might respond quite differently than if you felt energized and vital and strong and happy. If because of your dietary patterns, your blood sugar is low, you're going to respond quite differently than if you have a dietary pattern that allows you to be biochemically healthy. Now, the next obvious question that came up for me was, okay, it's true, it seems, that human beings' behavior is the result of the state they're in. I mean, if I'm physically run down, I'm going to respond quite differently than if I'm physically vibrant and strong. But my question is, how come when people are in the same states, they behave differently? I mean, one person, when they feel loved by you or they love you, will express it by hugging you. Another person may just tell you and not hug you. Why do they behave differently? Well, the difference is their models of the world. Some people, for example, when they're angry, have one model in their brain of how to respond. Out of a state of anger, their model of responsiveness is to lash out, and that's their only choice. Other people have more elegant choices of how to communicate, how to change how they feel, how to change the way other people behave through their communication skills, and so they behave differently. I remember seeing some pictures of war in the Middle East and over in Cambodia, where I watched at one point on film a 13-year-old boy who went into a state of rage and anger and then picked up a machine gun and blew a bunch of people away. I mean, it was an unbelievably devastating scene. How could a young man do that at the age of 13 years old? Well, one reason is he was in a state of rage. But when you and I are in rage, we don't pick up an Uzi submachine gun and blow someone away. What's the difference? Well, in his environment, in the war-ravaged area of Cambodia, it seems like an appropriate response. He's seen other people do it, so when he's in that state, he behaves that way. This is why it's critical that, one, we manage our states, and that, two, we develop as many choices as possible on how to respond out of states, so that we learn that even if we are angry, what's the most elegant way in which to express that anger where it does not harm ourselves or others, but rather takes us closer to our goals. And this can be done by modeling successful people. So understanding how to direct your states is like understanding how to get the best out of yourself at any moment in time. When we learn how to master our states by directing our internal representations, that is what we picture and say to ourselves, and when we manage our body effectively, we literally learn to master our lives, our emotions, and our behaviors. And we can take things that may seem very difficult and make them very simple. For example, I was recently on an airplane with Ken Blanchard, the author of The 1 Minute Manager. And Ken was writing an article at the time for Golf Digest in which they asked him to go out and work with the best golf instructor in the United States and see if he could distill some of the key elements and make them simple and share them in an article. Well, Ken worked for the man for several days and took a few strokes off his golf game, and he was very excited about that. And he said that there was one challenge, though. And the challenge was, he said, you know, there's so much to remember that when I go up to hit the ball, it's hard to remember it all. And I told him very simply, you don't have to remember it. I said, have you ever hit a golf ball perfectly? He said, well, of course. I said, have you hit a golf ball perfectly more than once? He said, sure. I said, then how to hit a golf ball is already trained. It's already programmed into your nervous system. All you got to do is go back into the same state you were in when he hit a golf ball perfectly, and everything will happen automatically. He said, well, that sounds real good, but I just can't imagine it being that easy. I said, well, it is. Let me show you how. And what I had him do was go back to the times when he hit golf balls perfectly and reassociate to those experiences and get back in the same exact state and then create a triggering device so he could put himself in that state at any moment in time. Well, he got very excited by this. The next day he went out to play golf and he knocked 15 strokes off his golf game. If you don't know that much about golf, that's pretty much unheard of. He shot better than he had in almost 15 years of playing golf, all because he learned how to get in the most effective state. About 2 years ago, Life magazine was doing an article on me and my work, and I made several claims about the work that I'd done and the kind of results I'd produced with athletes. So one of the writers, who seemed to be a little bit harsh at the time and a bit of a doubting Thomas, which she had a right to be, said, well, let's see you produce the result with somebody right now. I said, well, get me an athlete. So we happened to be at my home at the time, and the Laker game was on, the Los Angeles Lakers. And there was a man named Byron Scott on there. He'd shot one of 9 shots that day and scored 3 points. And Chick Hearn, the announcer, was talking about how terrible he'd played. Well, I said, get me him. He'd be a great example. And they did. I went up to Los Angeles the next afternoon, and I worked with Byron Scott, just showing him how to change his state briefly. Nothing very intense, nothing very long. But before I showed him, we let him just shoot free. And he shot around the courts, taking various shots, and he was shooting about 1 out of every 3 shots, effectively. And then I began to work with him. And the way I worked with him is I had him access the parts of his body and his brain, how he represented a shot when he made one. What was he thinking in his brain? What was he picturing unconsciously? What was he saying to himself? What were the quality of his movements like? How was he breathing? I did this with him for about 15 or 20 minutes, at the end of which we showed him how to create this same triggering device, so that he could put himself in state consistently. Well, I gave him the basketball, and he made 28 shots in a row from every place on the court. He didn't miss after the 28th shot. His partner began to think, well, this isn't possible. He says, man, I'm telling you, I can't miss. And he went out the very next day, and he shot 8 of 12 shots and scored 22 points and was the second highest scorer in the game. He practiced with us on 3-point shots. And by the way, by the end of the season, he was one of the top 3-point shooters in the entire NBA. Now, I'm not suggesting that I programmed that in and made him the best 3-point shooter, but what I did do is assist him in getting into the state that would allow him to make use of the resources he spent a lifetime developing. I did the same thing with a man named Michael O'Brien, a swimmer. Michael was in the 1984 Olympics in the 1500 freestyle, and he was hoping to win a bronze, maybe a silver medal. But during his practice sessions, he was continuing to sabotage his success. He wasn't going for it full on. He had a certain level of fear. I showed him how to reprogram out the fear and how to access his ideal states on cue. He went out and beat the United States champion by over 6.5 seconds and won the gold. Once again, I couldn't have programmed that in. He spent a lifetime developing the resources, but I showed him how to get access to them. And just as you have developed resources through your lifetime that you may not be accessing now, you can, by changing your state, by remembering times when you've been effective, embodying that physiology or posture, breathing pattern, facial expression, and seeing things and saying things to yourself the way you did then, you'll begin to feel similarly and produce the kinds of results that you deserve to produce now in your life. Great leaders and great motivators understand the power of state and how to change it in other people. The ability to change other people's states is a quality that can also change the quality of your life. I mean, haven't you ever walked into a restaurant and had the waiter or waitress walk up to you and say, "What do you want?" and be upset with you, and you haven't even done anything? Well, what's your response? Do you usually say, "Oh, this person's doing the best they can with the resources they have. They're in a poor state, so they're treating me poorly." It's highly unlikely. Usually we get upset as well. But in our getting upset, it doesn't change anything. We don't get better service. That person's still upset. What if instead you were to say, hey, this person is responding out of a poor state? They're not an unresourceful person. They're just in an unresourceful state. And I can change their state and change their behavior. How can one do this? Well, it's simple. Change the way that they're representing who you are. If they walk up and go, what do you want? You can go, nothing right now. I can see they're overworking you. Why don't you take your time and help everyone else, and when you have a chance, come on back and take my order. What's that going to do?
the person's going to probably look back and go, oh, I'm sorry, and they're going to reevaluate the state they're in. They're going to say, I'm sorry, I'm just stressed out because I didn't get any sleep last night, or I just argued with a cook, or I've been arguing with my boyfriend and I've been thinking about that, or the last people didn't leave me a tip, or whatever, something that's affecting their state. And they'll go, no, I want to take your order. And you go, no, please help everyone else first, then come back to me. They go, no, I want to help you. Okay. You can change people's states and have fun doing it. You could change a person's physiology. What if somebody came to you and they were real upset with you and you gave them a hug? Do you ever see your puppy dog? Doesn't your puppy know how to change your state? You start to yell at the puppy and it comes down and it puts its nose at your toes. That changes your physiology, changes your state, changes the way you behave towards it, doesn't it? And to be a leader, you've got to know how to change the states of other people. Dick Tomey is a master of state change. He's the head coach of the University of Hawaii football team. A good example of his skill was used in his game against Wyoming several years ago. By halftime, his team was being beat 22-0. They were being pushed all over the field by Wyoming and didn't even look like they belonged on the same field with them. At halftime, as the men began to walk into the locker room, it was obvious by their bowed shoulders and heads, the expressions on their faces, their physiology alone told you that they weren't going to go back out in the next half and access their greatest skills and win the game. But Tomey had an idea. He decided he'd change the way they were representing what 22-0 meant. And what he did was he pulled out a poster that he had formed. And on it, he had clippings of various newspaper articles about football teams that had come back from incredible margins. 32-0, where a team came back and won, 38-32. 25-point leads, where the team came back and turned it around. Well, the team members began to gather around and read these articles, and pretty soon they began to represent to themselves that they could win, that they could tap their top potential, that they could go out and win the game. The result? In this new state of resourcefulness, the team went out and held Wyoming scoreless in the second half, outscoring them and winning the game 28-22. That's the power of state. Now, let's work on some specific tools on how to change it. We understand the power. We know we can change things, but how do we do that? Well, I said one way to do it is change what you're representing. In NLP terminology, we call that reframing. Reframing simply means changing the person's way of evaluating what something means. It's important for us to remember that no matter what happens in our life, it doesn't have any meaning except the meaning we give it. Now, it's true that many of us are on automatic. Many of us go with what the culture teaches us, that if we try something that doesn't work, it means we failed, and then we feel bad. You don't have to feel bad. You can change it into an opportunity for learning. That would be an example of reframing. If you look at failures as learning experiences, as opportunities, then it immediately changes how you feel about it, the state you're in, and how much of your resourcefulness you can use in the future. Nothing has any power over you except the power you give it through your own conscious thoughts. I mean, for example, what if I were to ask you, what's the meaning of a footstep? You'd probably get a weird look on your face and say, what are you talking about? Well, let's think about it for a minute. If you're walking down a busy street, there's so many footsteps that you don't even hear them. In that situation, they don't have any effective meaning. But what if you're sitting home alone, hearing the steps moving toward you? Do the footsteps have meaning then? They sure do. The same signal, meaning the sound of the footsteps, will have many different meanings depending upon what it has meant to you in similar situations in the past. Your past experience may provide you with a context for that signal and thus determine whether it relaxes or frightens you. For example, if you hear the sounds of footsteps at a certain time, you might classify that sound as that of your spouse coming home early. People who have experienced burglaries, though, may think it means an intruder. Thus, the meaning of any experience in life depends entirely upon the frame we put around it. If you change your frame of reference, the context in which you perceive something, then the meaning changes instantly. This process is called reframing. And there are basically two ways that you can change a person's frame of reference. You can do what we call content reframing or context reframing. Both alter your internal representations by resolving internal pain or conflict, therefore putting you in a more resourceful state. Context reframing involves taking an experience that seems to be bad, upsetting, or undesirable, and showing how that same behavior or experience is actually a great advantage in another context. Children's literature is filled with examples of context reframing. Rudolph's nose, which made people make fun of him, was actually an advantage and made him a hero in the context of a dark and snowy night when Santa was in great need.
The ugly duckling suffered great pain because he was so different, but his difference was his beauty as a full-grown swan. Context reframing is invaluable in business. Great innovations are made by those who know how to reframe activities and problems into potential resources in other situations. For example, oil was once considered something that destroyed the value of land for crop usage. Yet look at its value today. Several years ago, lumber yards had difficulties disposing of large amounts of waste sawdust from their mills. One guy took that waste and decided to put it to use in another context. He pressed it together with glue and lighter fluid and created something called Presto Logs. After contracting to take away all of this quote-unquote worthless sawdust from these sawmills, he began to market his product, and for 2 years, he had a multi-million dollar business with his major resource costing him nothing. But really, that's all an entrepreneur is, a reframer, someone who endows resources with new wealth-producing capacity. Content reframing involves taking the exact situation and changing what it means. For example, you might say your son never stops talking. He never shuts up. If you wanted to create a content reframe for this, you might say that he certainly must be a very intelligent young man to have so much to say. There's the story of a famous army general who was known to have reframed his troops during a heavy enemy attack by saying, "We're not retreating, we're just advancing in another direction." When a person close to us dies, most people in our culture are sad. Why? Many reasons. Feelings of loss, for instance. Yet some people are joyous. How come? They reframe death to mean something else. It means to them that the deceased is always with them, that nothing in the universe is ever destroyed, that things just change form. Some consider death to be graduation to a higher level of existence, so they're joyous about it. Another kind of content reframe is to actually change the way you see, hear, or represent a situation drastically. If you're upset about what someone said to you, you may envision yourself smiling as he says the same negative words expressed in the tonality of your favorite singer. Or you may see the same experience where a person upset you in your mind, only this time, as you see them speaking, surround them with your favorite color. Or you may even change what that person said to you in the first place and re-experience it in your mind in this new way. Hear them apologize to you. Or you could see him speaking to you from a perspective that puts you very high above him, looking down on him. Reframing the same stimulus changes the meaning sent to the brain and thus the states and behaviors associated with it. Let's do an example. What I'd like you to do right now is let's do an exercise so we can stop talking about this and applying it. Right now, I want you to just take a moment, and I want you to think about something that's upsetting you or has upset you, something that's frustrated you or angered you or upset you in some way. It doesn't have to be a major one. And what I'd like you to do is just go to the end of that experience as if it was a movie and run through it so you get to the end of it. And what I want you to do is sit up nice and straight, or stand up if you will, if you can, breathe fully, and I want you to act as if you're the most devious young child on the planet and you're about to do something really fun, silly, and sinister. And what I want you to do is I want you, when I say now, to immediately start running that same experience backwards, like a movie, and seeing everything happening in reverse at incredible speed. And while you do this, I want you to change it so if there are people involved with the situation, you change the color around them, their facial expressions, maybe the size of their nose, maybe they shrink down, maybe they grow. We're going to do a content reframe. So what I want you to do is just begin with me right now. Close your eyes and go back to the end of that situation, the thing that was bugging you, and right now start running it backwards very, very rapidly and keep running it backwards. See things change. See the person's eyes getting really big, then shrinking down. See their nose getting long. See their ears getting bigger. Hear the sounds, M-I-C-K-E-Y. Listen to the sounds of a circus as it's all happening here. Faster, faster. Change it. Change the color. Change the size. Have them apologize. Have them shrink down. Have them grow up. Talk to them. Tell them. Listen. Change different aspects of it continuously. Move it at fast speeds and bring it all the way back to the very beginning. Then run it forwards at incredibly fast speeds and change even more. Change the color. Change the shape. Change the size. Change their tone of voice so they sound like Mickey Mouse. They're going, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do this." Run it all the way through. Have fun. Smile. Do it all the way through to the end. Then run it backwards again at a different speed, even more rapidly. All the way through. Run it back and forwards. Keep changing it. And after you've done that a few times, then stop and run it through forward. And notice what you see now when you think of the situation and notice how you feel. If you've done this effectively, as I'm sure you have, you're probably either laughing, smiling, or you at least have neutral feelings about something that used to bother you. What have we done? We've changed the way you represent that situation to your brain, and thus the way you feel about the situation. Now you are at a level of choice instead of in reaction. It doesn't take a lot of time to change how we feel about things. A lot of people try and teach us that in order to create change, we have to go back and re-experience all our stuff and let go of it, because otherwise it builds up inside till it explodes. That's not an accurate model or metaphor for how the human nervous system works. A better metaphor might be that your mind and body are a lot like a jukebox, and the experiences of your life are like discs. And what happens is, life comes along and certain things, when you remember them, it's like pushing a button. And when you push that button, some buttons will push sad songs. Others push happy songs. So what do you want to do in life? Well, one option is to try and only push the buttons that play happy songs. But that's not always easy, because there are other people that come by and want to play with your jukebox and push some of your buttons. So you have another option. You can reprogram the buttons. So now when you push the button that used to play a sad song, when it goes to play it, you've changed the disc. You've re-recorded over it a new movie in your mind, as you just did. So now when that situation happens and the button is pushed, you can just smile, or you can just feel neutral about it instead of being in reaction. You wouldn't be concerned that if a person didn't listen to all the discs in their jukebox, that the jukebox would explode and overflow onto everyone else, because you know you don't have to play all the discs. You can re-record them or you can replace them. Your brain is very similar. You can take any experience and re-record over it. You can change your mental movies, change the way you feel from this day forward, and you can do it in moments about just about anything.
This site contains exercises that ask you to close your eyes and use visualization techniques. You may want to wait to listen to this side until you're not driving, so you can relax completely and get full benefit from this tape.
There was a touching and powerful article in the Baltimore Sun newspaper that was published not long ago. It was about a young boy named Calvin Stanley. It seems Calvin rides a bike, plays baseball, goes to school, and does just about everything else that 11-year-olds do, except see. How could this little boy do all these things while many people in the same situation just give up on life or live in sorrow? As I read the article, it became clear that Calvin's mother is a master reframer. She has turned every experience that Calvin has, experiences that others would have classified as limitations, into advantages in Calvin's mind. Since that's what he represents to himself, that's what Calvin experiences. Here's some examples out of the article of how his mother communicates to him. Quote, Calvin's mother remembers the day her son asked why he was blind. I explained he was born that way and that it was nobody's fault. He asked, why me? I said, I don't know why, Calvin. Maybe there's a special plan for you. Then she sat her son down and told him, you are seeing, Calvin. You're just using your hands instead of your eyes. And remember, there's nothing you can't do. One day, Calvin was very sad because he realized he'd never see his mother's face. But Mrs. Stanley knew what to tell her child. The article continued. I said, Calvin, you can see my face, you can see it with your hands and by listening to my voice, and you can tell more about me that way than somebody who can use his eyes, unquote. The article went on to say that Calvin moves in the sighted world with the trust and faith and the unshakable confidence of a child whose mother has always been there. Calvin wants to become a computer programmer and someday design programs for the blind. You know, the world is full of Calvins. We need more people who use reframing as effectively as Mrs. Stanley did. I had the good fortune of recently meeting another master reframer. His name is Commander Jerry Coffey. He's an incredible man who used reframing to keep his sanity while he spent 7 years in solitary confinement in a POW camp in Vietnam. Our first reaction to hearing this is probably to wince a bit. However, nothing is good or bad except what thinking makes it so, as Shakespeare pointed out. And Jerry decided to represent to himself that this was a great opportunity to learn more about himself than ever before, a chance to become closer to God, something that someday would make him proud of the way he handled himself. With that frame of reference, he saw everything that happened as part of a personal development experience, and he came out totally and positively transformed 7 years later. He wouldn't give up the experience for $1 million, he says. Think of a major mistake that you've made in the last year. You might feel an instant rush of gloom, but chances are the mistake was part of an experience with more success than failures. And as you consider it, you'll probably begin to realize that you learned more from that mistake than from anything else you did that month. So you can zero in on what you did wrong, or you can reframe the experience in a way that focuses beyond it to what you've learned. There are multiple meanings to any experience. The meaning in life is whatever you choose to emphasize, just as its content is what you choose to focus on. One of the keys to success, then, is finding the most useful frame for any experience so you can turn to something that works for you rather than against you. But one thing I cannot stress enough is that you're in control. You run your brain. You produce the results of your life. Reframing is one of the most powerful ways you can change the way you think about an experience. You already put frames on experience, so now it's time to do it consciously to make sure they empower you rather than limit you. Take a moment and reframe these situations. Someone comes to you and says, "My boss yells at me all the time." How would you reframe that response? What could you say? Well, you might say, "It's great that he cares enough about you to tell you how he really feels. He could have just fired you." That changes the response, doesn't it? "I had to pay $4,000 more in income tax this year." A reframe to that might be, "That's great. You must have made a lot more money this year than last year." Somebody says, "We have little or no extra money to buy Christmas presents this year." Great, then you can become much more ingenious and make something people will never forget instead of buying that run-of-the-mill gifts that you used to get. Someone says, "Every time I begin to succeed in a big way, I sabotage my success." It's great that you're now aware of that pattern, so with that awareness, you can now change things. Reframing is happening all the time. It's part of advertising. Isn't that what Coca-Cola and Pepsi are constantly fighting over? Who can control the frame? The Pepsi challenge versus Coke is it? Ronald Reagan is probably one of the greatest reframers of all time. One of the best examples of his reframing ability came in the second presidential debate against Walter Mondale. In the first debate, Reagan's age had become an issue for the first time in the campaign. Of course, that was a reframe too. People already knew how old he was, but his stumbling performance and the press coverage of it reframed his age from a simple fact to a potential liability. In the second debate, Mondale made comments that again implied Reagan's age was a liability. People waited for Reagan's rebuttal. In his best aw shucks tone, he said, "Nah, he didn't think age should be an issue in the campaign." He said he had no intention of making an issue of his opponent's youth and inexperience. In one sentence, he completely reframed the question in a way that guaranteed it no longer be a major factor in the race. Remember, every human emotion has its place. It can be reframed. So use reframes so that you continually perceive the world in a way that empowers you. Now, how else can we change how we feel? How else can we run our brains? Well, we've talked about changing what we picture in our minds, what we say to ourselves, but also we can change how we picture things and how we say things to ourselves. In other words, as we've already stated, how we picture things in our mind makes a difference. Let me give you an experience so you can feel the difference in your body. Close your eyes for a moment, and what I'd like you to do is, again, think of something else. Think of something that's been bothering you, making you frustrated or feel limited or upset. And what I want you to do is, as you see this in your mind, is just answer a few questions for me. And just answer them in your own thought processes. Notice, is this thing that's bothering you, if you make it into a picture, is it a movie, like a motion picture, or is it a still frame? Is it in color, or is it in black and white? Is it focused, or is it defocused? Does it have a frame around the picture, or does it seem to go on forever like a panorama? Is it bright, or is it dim or dark? Is it close to you, or is it far away? Is it life-size or bigger than life? Are you in the picture right there, associated and experiencing it, or are you seeing yourself in the picture over there? Do you hear certain sounds when you think of the situation that bothers you? Do you hear a certain tone of voice that affects you especially negatively?
Are you saying anything to yourself and your own thoughts as you remember the situation? What kind of sensations do you feel in your body? Do you have heavy feelings or light feelings? Warm feelings or cold feelings? Tense muscles or relaxed muscles? Where do you feel muscle tension if you feel it? Upper part of your body, an arm, a leg, where specifically? And then what I'm going to ask you to do is to make some changes in how, not what, but how you're representing this experience in your mind. And I want you to note what it does to your emotion or your state. What I'd like you to do is take this picture that you're imagining in your mind, this thing that bothers you, and bring it closer to you. Now notice, does that make the negative feeling more intense? For many people, it does. Make it bigger. Make it brighter. And again, notice what that does to your emotional state. For most people, when you make things bigger and brighter and bring them closer, it intensifies them and makes them more negative. Now, step into the experience so you feel it. Make the sound sound even more shrill. Change it so it becomes more intense. Feel more tension in your body. Feel more heaviness. Feel the sensations growing around your body. Now, does it feel much more negative than it did before? Great, so now you know how to depress yourself. You say, well, thanks a lot. I just want to show you what you already do in order to get depressed. These are things you do unconsciously. Now you're aware of them consciously. Since you're aware of them, we can also change them. So let's change it. Take this picture of this thing that's bothered you and push it far away out in front of you. Push it further away so it's way out there. And then notice, have your feelings not dropped in their negative intensity? Have they not become much more neutral than they were a few moments ago? By changing the proximity of your representations, you immediately change how you feel as well. It lessens the intensity as it gets further away. Now, take that picture and make it black and white and make it a still frame. And as you do this, notice again if the state changes and becomes more neutral or less intense than it was before. Next, take this picture and shrink it way down and make it defocused. So now you have this little dinky defocused little thing way out there. And notice your feelings are quite different than they were before, aren't they? Now, take that picture that's way out there and change the sounds. So now you hear the sounds coming out in a different way. Now the sounds have more of a rhythm to them. Make the feelings out there, way over there, feel really light and gentle and relaxed. And then take that picture and push it into the sun. Just imagine it going in the sun and watch what happens as soon as it hits the sun. And notice how you feel now. Think about the situation now. And I think what you'll find is you either have neutral feelings, maybe even some positive feelings, but at least neutral feelings about this thing that was bothering you. And then open your eyes. Now, what have we done? All we've done is changed how you've been representing these things to yourself. Not the what. You were seeing the same things. We didn't change the content, just how you were doing it. We call this changing submodalities. Now, submodality sounds like a complicated word, but it's actually very simple. You have five senses that you experience the world through. You see, you hear, you taste, you touch, and you smell. Those five senses are also known as your five modalities, or five modes of experiencing the world. So a submodality is a subset or a more specific description of how you see things, or how you hear things, or how you feel things, etc. If a major set in an example like this was cars, then a subset might be Mercedes. If the major set in human experience is visual, then a subset might be brightness or size or shape. So what's the impact when we change submodalities? Well, the impact is quite profound, as I'm sure you experienced. Why? Well, think about it. Haven't you had people say to you before, oh, you're blowing things out of proportion? They're describing probably exactly what's going on in your brain, because when you make things larger, it intensifies your feeling about them. If they're negative, it intensifies the negative feeling. If it's a great picture, it intensifies the feelings that are positive about that picture. Have you ever had a situation where a job seemed to be so big that you didn't even know where to start? Most of us have. You want to know how to change it? Just stop for a moment, close your eyes, and imagine the project. And then shrink it way down to size where you can imagine the whole project, you doing it, and seeing that picture of that happening in your right hand. All of a sudden, you'll find that by making it smaller, it seems much less intimidating. All of a sudden, you feel differently. And because you feel differently,
you'll be in a better state. And when you're in a better state, you'll get access to the part of you that does know how to handle the situation. You won't be overwhelmed. You'll be able to handle it. Now, I know this sounds like a simplification, but it's exactly what happens in your brain. If you've ever had a project and somehow turned yourself around to go do it, the way you did it unconsciously probably was by shrinking it in your unconscious mind. Now you have the ability to do it right away and not have to wait till somehow you manage to change things. You can change them right now and you can do it directly. Have you ever heard somebody say, I just need to get some distance from my problems? Well, guess what? You don't have to go far away. Just take your problems and push them far away. Push them way out there and notice immediately you have a different emotional state. You want to know why some people are unhappy all the time? It's real simple. They take all the positive experiences of their life and they store them far away, or oftentimes behind them. Let's try something else. What I'd like you to do is close your eyes, and I want you to think of something that's happened in the last few days or the last week. Anything at all that you have some feelings about. Just think of anything at all that you want, some experience that's happened in the last week or so. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take that experience and, first of all, notice where it's located. Is it in front of you? Is it above you? Is it below you? To the right? To the left? Where is it located? Is it behind you? And what I want you to do is I want you to notice how recent it feels like that happened. And it should feel fairly recent, I would imagine. Now take this experience, this picture, these sounds, these feelings, and I want you to just imagine putting them behind your back and then pushing them behind you further and further and further until the picture goes like 2 or 3 miles behind you where you can't see it, where it's dark and small and it's a little tiny thing way, way, way behind you. Now, as it's way back there, think about it being way back there and think about how recent does it feel now? Does it feel like it happened last week or quite a long time ago? Let's try something else. Bring that experience back where it was. Bring it from way back there and put it back where it was. If it was a positive experience, if it's a negative experience, you might want to put it behind you. Haven't you heard people say things like, oh, God, he's so great. He just puts all the problems behind him. People who succeed do put their problems behind them, literally. And they bring the things they're excited about them and they keep them in front of them. So in their mind, they're stored mentally in front of them, constantly enticing them to go for more, to become more, to do more. Now let's try something else. Think of a pleasant memory that you had from your childhood, any memory at all. And what I'd like you to do is notice as you think about it way back then, how recent does it feel like it happened? Next, take that image or that experience and bring it forward till it's very, very close. And it's very big and very bright. Make it big, bright, and close right in front of you. Bring it even closer. Now, how recent does it feel? If you just judge by your emotions and not your intellect, does it not feel like it happened much more recently? Would you like to know how some people remain unhappy most of their life while other people remain very happy? It's very simple. People who are unhappy often take the most positive experiences of their life and they put them behind them and push them back and make them small and dark. People who are very happy tend to take their happy experiences and keep them right in front of them and put the negative experiences behind them. People who are unhappy have a strategy for doing so. They take the great happy experiences of their life and they make them small so they don't feel very positive, they don't feel very happy. They often put these positive experiences behind themselves and store them far back away so they don't feel very recent. Oftentimes when you talk to an unhappy person, you say, well, God, you've had all these great things happen to you in the last couple of weeks. And they go, no, I just don't feel that way. They don't feel that way because of the way they represent their positive experiences. They represent them in a way that's impotent. What people who are unhappy do with their negative experiences is they often enlarge them, make them bright, make them focused, make them clear. They often associate to them. They often store them right in front of themselves. So they're constantly near, making them feel bad while the positive experiences are far away. I know a man named W. Mitchell who lives in Denver, Colorado. He's a very, very special man. About 12 years ago, had an interesting experience. He was riding a motorcycle 65 miles an hour down the highway in San Francisco. Something caught his attention on the side of the road. He glanced over to see what it was while he was driving, turned back what seemed like a split second later, but it actually passes about 5 or 10 seconds. When he looked up, a Mack truck had stopped right in front of him. He was heading into the back of it 65 miles an hour. In an effort to save his life, he threw his motorcycle down at the last second and skidded on the ground underneath this truck at 65 miles an hour. Now, that's bad enough, only something worse happened. The gas cap on his motorcycle popped off. fuel spilled out all over the place. The friction ignited it. Boom! Instantly, fire. Three quarters of his body burned off. His entire face melted. His fingers burned off. He wakes up in a hospital bed in searing pain, unbelievable pain. I mean, he's fearing to breathe, fearing to move. He comes back from this experience because he has mastered his what with himself? Mastered his communication with himself. Somehow he gets himself through this experience and literally goes back to work in the business community. He starts a business and becomes a millionaire within 2 years. Millionaire from nothing, from scratch. He got $100,000 in the accident, used it to start a business. Guess what the business was? A wood-burning stove company. Yes, it's a fact. He decided that was his way of conquering his fear and became one of the most successful wood-burning stove companies in the entire United States, sold out of Vermont. Now, 3 years later, he has another experience. He has an airplane accident and becomes paralyzed from the waist down for life. Now, according to his wife, he's fried and crippled. And of course, she doesn't want to be around a fried cripple, so she leaves him. Right? You thought you had problems. Now, here's this man who now, after weeks and weeks of working at this and developing his body, comes back, and now he has to face his life. He's grotesquely burned. People don't even want to look at him. It's hard to even look at him. He's so grotesque looking. They cut off his toes, and they sew them on his hands so he has something to manipulate with, right? And here's this man is now beginning his life again, right? I mean, his life makes most of our worst tragedies look like a comedy, doesn't it? And guess what? He's totally joyous. Because you know what? He understands that it's not what happens, it's what you do. He said, okay, this is what's happened. I can keep worrying and feeling bad about what happened, or I can decide what I'm going to do with my life. And he decided he was going to do something that was going to make a difference. And he decided that there were a lot of issues in the community of Colorado that he thought were important that were not being addressed. So he decided to become a politician. He ran for Congress 2 years ago and came very close to winning. He won the internal game. He didn't quite win the external game. He is now this year running for lieutenant governor of Colorado, and he seems to be the favored candidate for the Democratic Party. Not bad. Arguing the issues intensely. Great communicator. In fact, one of his logos, one of the things that he has on all of his buttons is said, it says, send me to the governor's mansion, and he said, I won't just be another pretty face. See, he's mastered his communication himself. He knows it's not what happens, it's what you do. Julio Iglesias. How many of you have heard of him? No kidding. You know why you've heard of him? Because his music is played every 30 seconds somewhere in the world. Not bad. One of the greatest selling artists in the history of the world. Did that happen because this man had such great ability, such great talent? He grew up young with his tremendous singing voice, right? And that, you know, suave look, right, that knocks women over and all that kind of stuff. Is that what happened? No way. At the age of 20, he wanted to be either a soccer player or an attorney. And he had a car accident where they thought for sure he'd die. Not only did he survive, but then they told him he'd never walk again. He didn't believe that either, fortunately, and he kept working at it. He lived for 1 year in the hospital. While he was there, a nurse gave him a guitar, and he began to try singing and playing with his voice and working on himself. That's how his career got started. In high school, they wouldn't even let him in the choir. He didn't even want to be there except his girlfriend was in that class, and he figured he'd get next to her and be with her more. He had no interest in singing. All of a sudden, boom, transformed the greatest singer, one of the greatest singers in the history of the world. All because he realized it's what? It's what you what? It's what you do that makes a difference. We can direct our own states now by changing the way we represent things. And we can take positive things and make them even better. We don't just have to change problems. That's easy. Let's do some good things. Close your eyes. Let's try another exercise. Think of something that creates for you feelings of ecstasy, feelings of joy, something that creates powerful positive feelings, and make a picture of that in your mind. And by the way, if you think you have difficulty making pictures, just feel the feelings you have when you feel joy and ecstasy. Hear what you say to yourself. And then gradually you may begin to have pictures appear as well. Just imagine and notice this feeling that creates feelings of ecstasy. Is it a movie or is it a still frame? Is it life size or smaller? Is it in color or black and white? Is it focused or defocused? Is it bright, dim, or dark?
Is there a frame around it, or is it a panorama that goes on forever? Are you in the picture experiencing it, or are you watching it from over there? Is it close to you or far away? What sounds do you hear? Is your own voice involved? What's the tone of the voices you hear that creates these positive feelings of joy and ecstasy? What are the sensations in your body? Do you feel light or heavy? Do you feel tension or relaxation? And if you do feel tension, where do you feel the tension? See, just by changing your submodality of tension, you can immediately change your state. Notice all the sensations. And now let's try something. Let's make this even better. Take this experience and bring it closer. For most people in the culture, and everyone's a little bit different, this intensifies the positive feeling. Bring it even closer. Try this one. Make it bigger. Even bigger. And notice what the impact of making it bigger is. Try this one. Make it brighter. Turn the brightness knob up. Make it much brighter. Notice how it feels. Brighter and brighter. Make sure you're in the experience. Make sure it's in color and there's movement. Make the sounds even more positive. Enhance them in every way you can. Enhance the sensations in your body as well. And as you do this, notice you do feel even better now than when you first thought about it. You can take any experience in your life and add juice to it, add joy to it by enhancing the way you represent it. So you don't have to just change problems. You can take things that make you feel good and make them turn into ecstasy. You have the ability to run your own brain. You can do things directly to change how you feel. And you don't have to rely on drugs or food or alcohol. If you want to, that's your business. But this is a more direct and precise way, and there are no side effects. Let's try another exercise. How do you feel when somebody says you got a bright future? Feels pretty good, doesn't it? Just try something. Imagine your future right now. Just get a picture in your mind about your future. Something that represents to you what your future might be like. And notice how you feel about it. And then just try one thing. Turn the brightness up. Make it brighter and brighter and brighter. Come on, try it again. Brighter. And notice how you feel about your future. Is it more attractive? Does it draw you more? Now, let's try the opposite. Look at that same picture and make it dark and black and whitish. Make it darker and darker and black and white. For most people, their future doesn't feel as attractive now. So turn it back up again. Put the brightness back up. Put the brightness in your future. And notice, you do feel like you have a bright future now, don't you? You quite literally can control how you feel. And by the way, if you feel like your future is bright, you're willing to do things today to make it even better. When people feel like it's not so bright, they feel like, why even try? Now, it's important to note that of all the questions that I've asked you about submodalities, most people have a couple that affect them most, because we're all different. For some people, making things darker will intensify it, rather than making it brighter. So just pay attention to the effect. Also, for some people, bringing something closer doesn't make a big difference, but if you make it brighter, it makes a huge difference. For some people, it's not what they see that makes a difference, but how they change the quality of the tone of voice. For example, do you have one of those internal dialogues that sometimes says to you, you can't do this? Do you ever have one of those things that stops you right before you go for it? Well, let me show you a way to handle it. Rather than trying to shut the voice down, just change the volume of the voice. So now instead of it saying, you can't do this, it now says, you can't do this. It changes how you feel instantly, doesn't it? And out of that kind of voice tone, you might laugh or change the approach. You might change that same voice so it's just as loud, but it has a sexual tone of voice. So now it says, you can't do that. For a lot of people, when they hear that tone of voice, they feel like really doing it. It's all up to you to make the changes and to find out what impacts you most. But once you discover it, you can find anything that upsets you. And if you discover, for example, that changing brightness is the biggest difference for you, you can just brighten it up. Instantly you'll feel differently. Instantly you'll behave differently. This is the power of mind mastery. This is the power of knowing how to run your brain. This is the beginning of your owner's manual for directing that brain to produce the results that you want right now. This is going beyond positive thinking to precise direction of your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. Various emotional states are impacted by the way we use our submodalities. Like, for example, let's take a look at love. Love for most of us is a wonderful, ethereal, almost mystical experience. It's also important from a modeling point of view to note that love is a state, and like all states, all results, It's produced by specific sets of actions or stimuli when they're perceived and represented in certain ways. How do you fall in love? Well, one of the most important perceptual ingredients of falling into love is associating with all the things you love about someone and disassociating from the things you don't love. Falling in love is such a heady, disorienting feeling for so many people because it's not a balanced one. You're not making a balance sheet of a person's good and bad qualities and running it through a computer and seeing what comes out. You're totally associating to a few elements of another person that you find intoxicating. You're never even aware, at least in that moment, of the person's faults. So what ruins relationships? Well, there are, of course, many factors. One may be that you no longer associate with the things that attracted you to that person in the first place. In fact, you may have gone so far as to associate with all the unpleasant experiences you've had with them and disassociate from the pleasant ones you've shared. How does this happen? A person may have noticed and made big pictures of his mate's habit of leaving the cap off the toothpaste or strewing her stuff on the floor. Maybe he no longer writes her love notes and she associates to that fact. Or possibly she remembers what he said to her in the heat of an argument and she listens to that dialogue play over and over in her head, re-experiencing how she felt. She doesn't remember the gentle way he touched her that day or the special things that he said the previous week or what he did for her on their anniversary. The examples can go on and on. Bear in mind, there's nothing wrong with doing this. Just be clear that this pattern of representation will probably not empower your relationship. What if in the middle of an argument, you remember the first time you kissed or held hands? A time when your lover did something really special for you, and then you made that picture big and close and bright again. From that state, how will you treat this person that you love? So the point here is it's critical that we look at our patterns of communication and ask ourselves regularly, if I continue to represent things to myself this way, what will likely be the final result in my life? What direction is my present behavior taking me? And is that really where I want to go? Right now is the time to examine what your mental and physical actions are creating for you. You don't want to find out later that something you could simply and easily have changed led you down a path to a place you didn't want to be. In addition, it might be really valuable for you to note if you have a particular pattern of using association and disassociation. There are many people who spend most of their time disassociated from most of their representations. They seldom seem to be emotionally moved by anything. Disassociation has its advantages. I mean, if you keep out of deep emotions about some things, you have more resources in handling them. However, if this is your consistent pattern for representing most of your experiences in your life, then you're really missing what I like to call the juice of life. You know, a tremendous amount of joy. I've counseled conservative people who were limited in expressing what they felt about their lives, and I've helped them to set up new perceptual patterns. By greatly increasing their associated internal representations, they've come alive and found life to be a whole new experience. On the other hand, if all or the vast majority of your representations are fully associated, you might find yourself to be an emotional misfit. If you develop this strategy, you might find great difficulty in coping with life because you feel every little thing, and life isn't always fun or easy or exciting. A person who is fully associated with everything in life is extremely vulnerable and will usually take things too personally. The key to life is a balance in all things, including the perceptual filters of association and disassociation. We can associate and disassociate from anything we want. The key is to associate consciously so it helps us. We can control any representation we make in our brain. Remember, when you change the way you represent something to yourself, you instantly change the choices available in your mind and in your body. Think of the power that you have from this day forward by knowing that you are not at the effect of anything. You can change how you feel and how you behave about anything by changing either what you're representing, what it means, or how you're representing it to yourself, or how you're using your body. Because your body, of course, is the filter that will tell you how to feel. See, if you try and look at the advantage of something and see it as a benefit in another situation, but you're sitting with your shoulders collapsed, your head down, you're breathing shallow, it's highly unlikely that you're going to feel congruent or certain that there really is a benefit in the situation. But if you will command both the use of your body so that you move it and use it in positive ways, while you change the meaning and what you represent, you can change any aspect of your life. If W. Mitchell can change what life means to him, then you can change what it means to you.
And to be an effective business person, you've got to be a master reframer. To be an effective leader, of course you must be a master reframer. There's a famous story about Tom Watson, the founder of IBM. One of his subordinates had made a horrendous mistake that cost the company $10 million. And he was called into Watson's office and he said, "I suppose you want my resignation." Watson looked at him and said, "Are you kidding? We just spent $10 million educating you." There's a valuable lesson in everything that happens in life. The best leaders are the ones who learn the lesson and put the most empowering frame on outside events. This works for politics, business, teaching, and your home life as well. Be a leader by directing your mind now. One final thing about controlling our states. Physiology is our fastest way of changing our states. It is even more powerful and quicker than changing what or how we represent things. This is why it's so powerful to take care of your body, to get on a good exercise regimen that does not stress you but empowers you physiologically. When we feel good physically, it affects the way we perceive the world. The same challenges don't seem to be so tough anymore because the vehicle we need to make it through life with is taken care of and feels strong. Even though I've spent more time in this tape talking about how to change our representations, that's only because the descriptions of those takes longer. What's equally important, if not more important, is how you use your body. Diet is critically important. If you're ingesting foods that cause your body to work overtime and drain your nervous system of energy, then you're robbing yourself of a great deal of the resources that could change the quality of your life. If you're taking in high levels of sugar or if you're smoking, then you're robbing your body of oxygen and you're changing your biochemistry in ways that are definitely going to alter your moods. After all, that's the only reason people use drugs, is to alter their states. So why use food as a drug when you can do it directly without having the side effect of excess pounds or a hangover the next morning? In addition, the critical key is to make sure your body and mind are working together and not fighting each other. If in your mind you're representing you can do something, but your body doesn't match that, then you're incongruent and that'll cost you. So it's critical to notice the difference between being congruent about something and being incongruent. I'm sure there have been times when you've talked to someone and you left the meeting and they said they'd do something, but you didn't believe that they would. And the reason was because your unconscious mind probably noticed some incongruency. It probably noticed that the person was shaking their head no while they said, "Sure, we'll get it done." This happens more often than you can realize. Or someone says, "I really love you," while they shake their head no. That's called incongruence. The body is saying one thing and the mouth is saying another. Power comes when you align your body and mind in the same direction. So make sure while you're reframing your thoughts, you also reframe your body and make sure that you're moving with the quality you desire to change. And once again, remember, you can change how you feel by changing the way you walk and move, and that'll help you to change the way you represent things quicker and easier than if you just try and change the picture. Posture and breathing pattern are number one for changing state. Changing what you perceive and how you perceive it are number two. And there are many models available to you. If you want to have some fun sometime, get a videotape of somebody like Bruce Springsteen and start modeling or mirroring the way he uses his body. Use the same kind of gestures, use the same kind of tone of voice, the same kind of facial expression. I think you'll discover something really exciting. Get a tape of Martin Luther King and try and speak with the same tonality. When you do this, you'll begin to send the exact same messages to your brain as they send to theirs through their own physiology. It's quite a profound and enjoyable experience, and it'll give you new choices of how to use your body to produce peak experiences in your life. And finally, take care of your physical health. That includes exercise and that includes diet. So now you have the fundamental tools to run your brain, to direct your internal computer to produce any result you want. You can now choose ecstasy, love, desire, confidence, or any other emotion you want any moment in time. The power and the tools are at your fingertips. The buttons are your physiology and the way you represent things to yourself. So once you know how to do things, the question is, will you use these tools? And what will cause you to use them is if you have a compelling enough future. So let's take a look at how to create a future that's real.